Welcome back, y'all. I am author K.A. Simpson, and you are listening to the second long-awaited episode of Black Boy Writes. I first have to apologize about the long lapse in episodes. There was this little thing called COVID that happened and threw many of my plans for a loop, but no matter, we are back and ready to continue. Writing to me has always been more like a response to reading, or more like a reflex of not reading or seeing characters who look or act like me at the center of the narrative. In fact, I had become curious about writing by way of seeking a way to combat this, putting my own stamp of approval for the solution to the problem. I've never been formally trained in the process of writing, so the act of learning writing techniques was, therefore, an amusing investigation, a sort of exploratory journey, which I have come to learn is almost never ending. I mean, I am still on that journey, and every new page I write is like another step. But there is an audacity to writing, to making a living as a writer. One needs the audacity to think that the words swimming around in their minds are interesting enough for people to read once they manifest onto the page. This audacity has lurked long within the shadow of my past, planted by the strong, educated women who raised me and nurtured many of my experiences. Perhaps I stoked audacity's fire with the strength I saw in the Black community growing up in and around Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati, Ohio. And one of the products of that stoking is this book, Chronicles of a Boy Misunderstood, which I was so happy to introduce to you in the last episode. So this week, I plan to continue where we left off in the last episode, where we introduced to you the main character, a teenager, the night of his high school graduation, where he is not only longing for his secret love, but also longing to find a way out of his mundane life. High school graduation was the last time that I saw my secret high school fling until today, on a Greyhound bus to Monterey, California, from San Francisco's SFO International Airport, to my first duty station after the Army basic training. The bus stopped in San Jose to pick up passengers, and Chase's smile appeared under his Class A uniform cap as he boarded the bus. I didn't get to leave town the way some of my classmates did. Many went away to colleges like Brown, Yale, Dickinson, and William and Mary. Others stayed close to home, just trekking to Transylvania University, the University of Kentucky, or the University of Cincinnati. My experience with school over the last 12 years did not harbor a safe realization that 4 more years of education would do that much for me. So in a fit of hysterics, I walked into my Army recruiter office at the corner of Madison Avenue and 5th Street in Covington and said, "Sign me up." At the time, I thought I could kill 2 birds with 1 stone. I would get away from the sedentary life of Covington, Kentucky, and get away from the fear of being found out about, you know, being gay and all. It was to my surprise that when I enlisted in late 1995, close to 2 years after President Clinton passed Don't Ask, Don't Tell legislation, I sat across the desk from a skinny, chocolate-haired Army sergeant, his head down, filling out paperwork when he asked the question, "Have you ever engaged in sexual acts with another man?" Though I was 18 at the time, just months from the insanity of high school, I knew that straight was not what I was. And I knew it for a long time, but I couldn't let that Army sergeant know that. I knew I was gay ever since I watched Patti LaBelle's live performance at the Apollo with my mother one night. "I want to be just like her one day and fly over the rainbow," I remembered saying to her. I was only 7 years old. As I grew older, I became more and more comfortable with the idea that I would never sleep with girls. As I found out more about sex, I could not figure out the allure of having sex with them. Sex with boys seems much more appealing to me. Not that I had much experience doing either. I just knew that it was more enjoyable to watch the boys' high school track team practice out on the field with their shirts off and sweat glistening. I wanted to tell my mom and dad that I was gay, and I had planned out the moment in my head for years, but the occasion was never quite right. When I saw Chase on that bus, my urge to raise my hand to get his attention was subdued with trepidation, remembering the cold shoulder he gave me the last time our eyes locked at graduation. I just sank lower in my seat and turned my head to the window. "What's the matter with you, Dickerson?" Private First Class Kumar Patil must have heard me say holy shit as I tried to hide under my own Class A uniform cap. He and I were battle buddies throughout our entire basic training, and we had grown to be good friends during the trials and tribulations that the first few months in the military could bring. But I suspected he too entered the army to escape his own life back home. "You look as though you have just seen a ghost." Patil was the son of an engineer from India and an American housewife. His thick eyebrows and tuft of night black hair originally attracted me to sit next to him during our first evening of basic training. His father was the president and head engineer at a private science research firm outside of Philadelphia, and he did not spend a lot of time with his three sons, but he had high expectations for all of them, some maybe too high. Basic training in the Army was much like I thought it would be, a bunch of scared kids desperately trying to find their way in life, but not exactly sure how to get there. It was so much like the film Full Metal Jacket that at times I could have sworn that there was a boom mic just out of sight. There was little time to fantasize sexually about my bunkmates during basic training, but that did not stop me. How could I? Especially during our morning shower regimen, up to 50 fully naked recruits waiting in line to wash away the grime from the previous day's grueling routine. "Hurry up, Pry!" That was our drill sergeant's collective name for all recruits during basic training. "We have 24 hours of work to get through and only 12 hours to do it in." "I can't wait to see what kind of shit we get into today," Patil said to me one morning in the open shower bay. "I think we finally get to shoot our M16 rifle we've been lugging around. This is the shit I came into the army to do."
I don't see anything appealing about shooting a weapon," I said. "Our job is to make peace, right?"
"Well, we're not in Kansas anymore, soldier," Patil laughed.
It was then that our drill sergeant poked his head into the open shower bay.
"More than two lazarins around the old nuts and berries down there, and it's called a playing with yourself. Now let's get a move on."
Just as fast as he appeared, the drill sergeant disappeared, and Patil turned and wagged his penis where the drill sergeant's face had been, giving me a sideways glance and a smirk. From then on, I knew that he would be the one I would need to buddy up with if I was going to make it through this ordeal. The 2 months of basic training was centered on chow, morning, noon, and night, with some sort of training in between. Unbeknownst to me, before entering the military, there were a myriad of things you needed to know to become a soldier. The funny thing was that walking in formation to cadence proved to be the downfall of many of my fellow recruits. My hardest obstacle was learning hand-to-hand combat. Though we were outfitted with padded pugil sticks and helmets, I managed to receive a sharp uppercut to my lip, leaving a permanent scar. Needless to say, I got out of that activity in a hurry. I didn't mind the regimen of basic training too much.
At least I didn't have to guess when I wake up, when to go to sleep, and when to eat. It was all decided for me. It took some getting used to, but before long, I saw that it was a welcome friend. I used the time I would have taken to make decisions to explore my own thoughts. But Till, on the other hand, fell head over heels in all that was the army, right quick and in a hurry. He loved the type of person that he was becoming. He found that it was a welcome departure from the life he once led in the deep silence of his father's accomplishments. One night, Patil and I were in our barracks shining our boots for the next day's inspection, when the drill sergeant graced us with his presence. Patil looked up from his boots and acknowledged him before going back to his policing job. By then, we were halfway through the two-month training, and we were all becoming to fall into our natural order. There was the chubby kid, the intellectual, and I was the awkward one that always flew just under the radar. This was the complete opposite of Patil. He was the drill sergeant's golden boy, and could do no wrong in his eyes, but doubled as the class clown when he wasn't looking. His eyes lit up every time he was called to demonstrate a task.
"Damn good spit shine, Pryor," the drill sergeant grunted. "I want you to lead the formation in tomorrow's inspection." "Dickerson," I jumped up. "You should stick close to Patil. Maybe you'll learn a thing or two."
Over the next few weeks of basic training, it seemed like Patil was getting asked to exemplify what a soldier should be as often as I masturbated back home. He'd spend hours at night, after everyone was asleep, preparing for the next day's activities to make sure that his footlocker was up to code. Even on Sundays, the days the drill sergeant gave us time to explore the base, go to the post exchange for personal items, or maybe grab a McDonald's hamburger, Patil was in the bunks squaring away his uniform. "Life is good here in Missouri," I overheard Patil say one day on the phone to his mother during one of our coveted telephone breaks. Though I knew my mom and dad were probably at work, I had no one to call. I stood in line behind him.
"I will be getting the Commandant's Award at graduation, so you and Dad will have a reserved seat in the front."
His eyes darkened.
"Oh, you guys won't be able to come?"
"Oh, well, that's okay. It's no big deal anyway." I definitely saw the transformation in Patil from the first day of basic training when he was a scared East Coast kid to a hard-nosed soldier. All the while, he kept me under his wing, and I grew to love him more like a brother than anything else. It was all to my pleasure when we found out that we were both assigned to serve together at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California, after training. I would watch him from the back of the formation as he droned on and became the quintessential soldier. But back in the barracks, we would laugh as though we had known one another for years. Sometimes at chow, he would swap out his pork chops for my meatloaf, and at night, we would talk about what we would be doing if we were back in the civilian world. But any time the conversation got too close to family life, there was a slight edge to his voice. I began to notice the same of myself when he got too close to the subject of how many times I had had sex with girls. The subject would come up often. I would think of the times that I had with Chase and switch the pronouns, but I felt I was never all that convincing. The conversation seemed to always organically move back to stuff like our favorite episodes of The Simpsons. My mom and dad made the drive to my graduation from basic training in our beat-up Woody wagon. Who knew that that car could make it from Kentucky to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri? Or, as we had come to call it, Fort Lost in the Woods. The few days leading up to the ceremony were a blur. It seemed as though the drill sergeant wanted nothing more than to get us recruits shipped out and then get ready for the next shipment of inductees.
When my parents arrived and saw me in my official Army uniform for the first time, it was a battle to keep from having my mom coat my face with her fluorescent orange lipstick and my dad from slapping me on the back. I found the idea of leaving yet another set of rules and moving on to the real Army a bit daunting. I remembered the way that mom and dad sometimes looked when they came home from work in the evenings while I was growing up. They'd shuffle lifelessly into the living room and plop down right in front of the couch, sometimes not even taking off their coats during the winter. Is that what I had to look forward to? After our basic training graduation ceremony, I looked over and saw Patil standing alone near two empty auditorium seats, staring at the sea of recruits with their families. I walked over to him. His eyes greeted me before I got to him. So, your folks weren't able to make it? I tried to cajole a smile out of him by fake punching him in the stomach.
Nah, he sniffed. Some business trip to Montreal, or something like that.
Man, that's a bummer, I said, trying to make small talk before I proposed the question. Hey, you want to meet my folks? They're the ones over there with the bad wig and the afro with the bald spot on top. I pointed over to them. They're going to take me out to lunch before we ship out to California. You can tag along if you want. We ended up going up to Golden Corral just off base. I began my all-you-can-eat meal traditionally with dessert. We spent most of the lunch making small talk, my dad asking questions about basic training, and my mom wanting to know if we were excited to go off to live in California. Patil turned on the charm that made the experience passable for him, but he kept glancing at the front door as if someone else might arrive. All through lunch, he shredded his paper napkins into bitter little squares. If you listened closely, between most of his punchlines, there were heavy sighs. Back on the bus, I waved off Patil's offer for water as I remembered those days, early days in the Army. I know I was sinking lower in my bus seat as Chase walked by.
Nothing's the matter, Patil, I answered to his look of concern. I just suddenly feel a little sick.
It wasn't until the bus began to move again I chanced to raise my head over the seat to see where Chase was seated, but I could not pick his head out of the sea of heads visible that bobbed up and down with the motion of the bus. Chase's Midwestern family was working class and lived in the same house in Covington since his parents' wedding months after their own high school graduation in the 70s. He was great at sports, which showed by the number of trophies that lined the walls of his family's unfinished basement, which doubled as his bedroom. In school, he was known as Sex on Legs for his perfect skin, dimples, and amazing body. He was the main focus of many of my masturbation sessions. In fact, and the fact that he was captain of our high school's football team not only helped his prowess with the girls, but also placed him on the top of the school's hierarchy. He was down to earth and not too obnoxious like the other jocks that got their kicks from beating up underclassmen. I've watched Chase from afar since we began taking classes together in the 7th grade. So I saw the boy grow into a man right before my eyes. Though we were in most of the same classes over the years, we did not speak to one another until our sophomore year, when we were paired together to make a science project. One night we were working on the project at his house in his bedroom for most of the night until, with both of our parents asleep, he grabbed a 6-pack of Bud Light from the basement refrigerator. I never had beer before, but was too embarrassed to let him know. By our 3rd can, Chase convinced me that stripping to my boxers was a brand new fad and dared me to break dance to the new Crisscross cassette tape that he bought the week before. Just after attempting the first move, I fell into his chest. His warm, white body was a stark contrast to my dark skin, and I reached inside his boxers. When we were finished, I confessed that I did not know what I was doing, and a confused look raced over both of our faces, but for different reasons. "This does not leave this room," Chase said, his face as serious as I had ever seen it. He stood up and slipped on his faded denim jeans and pushed me out the door. After that night, we never considered ourselves boyfriends. That kind of relationship was way too nouveau for Covington at the time, and I felt that Chase's psyche would crack under the pressure of labeling us a couple. In the amount of time that it took us to have sex, I could have taken out the trash or brushed my teeth. It seemed to go by so quickly. In addition, Chase's face seemed to show more doubt each time we fooled around. Despite this, I yearned for his touch every morning when I woke. Sometimes I would lie in bed and dream of a place where he would love me in the open and our love would not be drowned out, but adored. My social life in high school was even more disparaging than my love life, and there were times that I would go days without speaking to one of my classmates. When I did get a chance to speak, I felt a rush of exhilaration. Sometimes I just blurted things out, especially when my favorite teacher, Mr. Hubbard, was brought up in conversation. It happened one day after school, by the lockers in the hallway after one of his classes.
"Mr. Hubbard, that beer-bellied homo," the kid said to the gang of friends that huddled around his locker. "I should go tell the principal that he tried to molest me last week after school when he gave me detention."
A soft rumble of laughter came from the small group. Without thinking, I said, "Well, Mr. Hubbard has always been nice to me as a teacher. Have you tried to talk to him instead of calling him names behind his back?" The kid slowly turned and looked my way.
"What did you say to me, faggot?"
He spoke the last word as though it was someone's name. Everyone in the hallway slowed their pace. Some even stopped and lined the hallway. There were only a few things that could hold the school's collective attention, and the promise of a fight was definitely one of them. Chase just came around the corner and was standing outside of the crowd. Our eyes met. I silently called to him, but I wasn't sure if he was getting the message.
"So let's clear this once up all."
His voice bounced off my chest like a fist.
"The whole world is dying to know. Are you a homo or not?"
The freckles on the boy's face vanished, with his reddening of his cheeks and his eyes darkened. He saw that I was no longer focused on him and turned to see what was holding my attention and saw that it was Chase.
"Oh, that's right. It's not Mr. Hubbard's cock this homo's locked on. Ain't that right, Chase? It's yours, isn't it?"
Everything happened in the next few moments, and it seemed to move in slow motion. Chase lunged into the crowd. I saw how one of his fists found the kid's stomach, and when he bent over, I heard Chase's other fist connect with his red chin. The sound of flesh on flesh was like two fish slapping on wet concrete. The two fell to the ground, and it looked as though they were trained to be in a wrestling match. A teacher rushed to break up the fight, and the crowd dispersed. I packed my books, and I left the scene before any repercussion came my way. That afternoon, I walked home and saw Chase shooting hoops alone at the neighborhood park. He dribbled the ball against an imaginary defender, taking the basketball to the hoop for 2 points. His gym shorts left much to the imagination, except for the tight bulge that protruded at the front. "Nice shot," I called out to him from across the court. He didn't acknowledge my compliment. He just kept playing.
I just wanted to say thanks for looking after me today at school."
The ball hit the backboard and rolled to my feet.
A little help? Chase stood in the center of the court, looking my way, with his hands on his hips. Are you going to talk to me?
Throw me the damn ball!
I picked up the ball and hugged it, swaying side to side. He walked over to me in that sexy straight boy swagger that only he could manage to do without looking like a zombie. For a few seconds, we stood, nose to nose, not saying a word.
Why don't you go and find yourself a boyfriend or something?
He forced the ball from my arms.
You can't keep following me around like some little lost puppy.
But I kind of feel, I don't know, that I may have feelings for you. The ball came flying towards my head and grazed it as I ducked.
What the fuck did you say?
I didn't get a chance to answer. Chase grabbed the collar of my shirt and smacked the side of my head. There were many times that we touched one another, and even more times that I dreamt of the time that he would touch me in public. It's ironic that the first time that he did, he looked as though he was spearing an elephant.
I don't want to ever hear you say that again. Do you hear me?
He punched me in the gut and walked away, giving chase to his flung basketball. I fell to the ground and laid there at the side of the basketball court, half my body on the grass. There was a sob that tried to escape my chest, but for some reason, it never made it to my mouth. Chase was long gone. I watched the clouds meander across the sky, and I finally realized that Chase would never fall in love with me. Not like I wanted him to.
Wow, the audacity of writing. There you have it. This is my audacity. We found out a lot, right? Dickerson, the main character, did find his way out of a small town in Covington, Kentucky. But being gay, closeted, and a black male living in the mid-90s, it seems like he just jumped out of the frying pan and into the fire, doesn't it? Especially since he's trying to get out of his mundane life by going into the military. It definitely doesn't help that his down-low hometown crush, Chase, has also enlisted in the Army and, by some kind of kismic intervention, has been stationed on the same base as Dickerson. Oh boy, what is a boy going to do? Well, we will find out on the next episode, where we dive into Chapter 3 to see how all this plays out in and out of the barracks room. I'm K.A. Simpson, and you have been listening to Black Boy Writes. We'll see you next time.